You're listening to This QPOC Life, a podcast that looks at the world through the lens of a queer person of color. For all you first-timers out there, buckle up, kids. All month long, This QPOC Life will be discussing some spooky, ooky topics. And today, we're diving deep into the spirit realm. But if you're coming back, watch out for them witch books, because it's going to be a hell of a ride. Today, I have materialized three other inquisitors of the occult. Please, welcome to the stage.
You may call me Jolie, the unbelievable. My pronouns are they, them, and theirs. And you'll find me at Call Me Jolie on the internet.
Hi, kids. Carlos Rios here. You can catch me online at Trey Fabulo. My pronouns are he, she, they, herses. And rounding out the final Hispanic Heritage Month spotlight on Puerto Rican queens, Ricky Martin.
I can't compete.
Well,
with that.
Fucking done, bitch. Well played.
De nada.
Well played. Aren't he and his partner about to adopt another little kid?
Yeah.
That family.
I love that for them.
Thank you.
I can't front.
Do they have a sex tape out yet?
Here's hoping. We'll talk about it next episode.
Name it and claim it. Hi, everyone. My name is Zachary Aris.
Speaking of name it and claim it.
Look, that was actually my motto for 2018, but the motto for 2020.
Perfect vision, 2020.
Girl, I wish.
Be thou my vision, 2020.
My pronouns are open. You can find me online by Googling my name because I'm the only one in the world, and that feels correct.
I'm Jonathan, a.k.a. Darth Blasian,
a.k.a.
Blasian FMA. It's Halloween theme, right?
Yeah.
So no, Darth Blasian. Do you watch Star Wars? Thank you. He, him, his pronouns. And yeah, that's me. And this is
the award-winning This QPOC Life.
This QPOC Life.
So, as people of color, as POC, if you will, our relationship with Christianity is unique.
It's complex.
Complex.
It's like jazz.
Like jazz.
It's complicated.
It's real complicated. So, according to the Pew Research Center, 79% of Black Americans and 77% of Latin Americans identify as Christian. However, there are numerous instances of pre-colonial practices being incorporated into Christianity. Have y'all ever witnessed anything like that?
I just want to add, there's hella Asians that are Christian too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Jonathan.
Filipinos are Catholic. Koreans are Baptist.
There's a lot of Baptist Koreans.
There's a lot of Baptist Koreans.
How about you go to the Pew website and you pull the number and you put it into the script so we can
read it. Oh,
it
wasn't a criticism of your writing, Zach.
Damn.
It was just,
I feel very attacked.
Well, maybe if you stop watching that devil read, then maybe you wouldn't feel attacked.
So back to the question at hand. So I can speak to a couple of things that I have seen in my experience on this earth. And so as someone who is Puerto Rican, and in the Caribbean, there is a lot of mixing of pre-colonial religions and religious practices and then Christianity. So there's Santeria, which is a whole spiritual practice that is combining primarily African spiritual traditions, mm-hmm. and then things from Roman Catholicism and blending them together. There's
Taino culture.
So a lot of like native things that are going on. And so those are things that weave their way into the culture. And it's really interesting because even if not of course, but my family doesn't practice Santeria. However, like we're aware that people do it and there are ways that culturally it shows up even in Puerto Rican culture. So We have carnival, just like other islands and other faith traditions have carnival. That's usually right around, right around like Mardi Gras season, just before Lent. And during carnival, there are the dancers that are the traditional Puerto Rican dancers, which are in all white, which is the Bombay Plena. And so that is somewhat related to, and there are things about that kind of dance and that kind of style that actually harken back to Santeria and that is incorporated into Santeria practice, but it's not necessarily specifically for Santeros. And so that's an interesting piece. And then there's these really crazy sort of, I'll never forget this because it's like unsettling looking. Like they have these masked creatures that like people come in costume to these carnival parades. And then there's these, and I forget what they're called. They have a specific name, but they are these, and essentially they're spirits. And so they're like these big masks, like with like horns and stuff. And they're very unsettling looking. So when you're a kid, you're like, this is creepy, but that's part of your culture. So you like learn to understand that it's a part of it and you deal with it. And I don't know. I find it to be very interesting as we're thinking about how the colonizers came with their Christianity. And because of that, so many of us who do identify as people of color also identify as Christians or have some sort of Christian faith tradition or background. Mm-hmm. And we hold, many of us actually hold it very near and dear to our hearts. I mean, myself included. And it's one of those things where we've never like questioned why and if that's a good thing and what about all these other practices that existed before Christianity.
Right.
And how can we incorporate them in our lives? Do they make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, for the listeners, what is Santeria?
I just defined it earlier.
Well, sort of.
Why'd you have to respond like that?
I mean, I heard a bunch of words that I don't know, and I'm pretty sure there are people out there who don't know what those are either.
Yeah, so it's a spiritual practice that combines African faith tradition. So there's the worship of the Orishas, which were spiritual beings, kind of like gods and goddesses, and then Roman Catholic spiritual practices. So going to Mass, saying the Lord's Prayer, praying to Mary, those kinds of things. So those are, I mean, I don't delve deep into it, so I can't speak to it any further than that, but that's what I'm aware of it.
I have a lot of friends who do Santeria, which is interesting. But like, my experience with it is also very, very limited because, my mother would not allow any of that.
Right.
But like, you know, like my mom's not Puerto Rican. My mom is everything else in my family.
Right.
But like my dad grew up, I think my dad grew up Catholic. And then my mom, I think she had a fairly a religious upbringing because my grandfather was Black, but he wasn't particularly religious as far as I can tell, but was probably raised in church. And then my grandmother was from Japan, and she was, at least in Japan, was a practicing Buddhist, if I recall correctly. So, like, you know, my mother discovered Christ as an adult and then raised her children in that tradition. And in the non-denominational arc of that. So it is a
non-denominational?
Yeah. So my experience with Christianity is very, very interesting because it's like I didn't understand what Protestant versus Catholic was for a long time because I just thought it was all Christianity.
Well, it is
so long, right? No, yeah, it is, right. But like it just it didn't process.
There's a hierarchy.
I mean, growing up as a Southern Baptist, we were taught that Catholics were Mary worshipers and lost. But, you know, that was a very specific and limited understanding of God and Christ.
Same.
And all those things.
I loved having a Catholic parent and then a Southern Baptist parent.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually the only practicing Christians in the family with Mormon heritage, the only practicing Christians in the family became Methodists. And I don't even believe in that. So.
Oh. It's funny because a Methodist minister was my professor, my Bible professor in Wagner College when I discovered, wow, everything I was taught is wrong.
Well, Methodists have weird food, so I don't really trust them.
Weirder than crispy onions?
That's where it comes from. Ah. It's a Methodist and a Lutheran thing.
Well, so, speaking of crispy onions, what pagan or traditional beliefs play into your spirituality now?
What you got?
Oh, well, I got.
Like your green bean casserole.
Sure. So I think it's to a point, it's little things that come through both sides of the family, that small practices that you do out of habit, but in reality have some sort of basis in an older faith or a paganism. So like my mom, every time that she cooks with salt, she always will instinctively start throwing it over her shoulder. And she does it every time that she pours salt out because, you know, it's the belief that if you spill salt, the devil's going to come and get you. So you have to throw it over your left shoulder to keep the devil away from you. Mm. So my mom has always done that. Mm-hmm. And it's become to a point where she just instinctively, every time she'll shake, throw it over the shoulder.
Wow.
Come on, shake and go.
It's a shake and go to get the devil off you. Another one is that my mom will also, when I was like five, when my grandfather was in the hospital, she was like, oh, she's like, I know what to do. You have to take a quartz crystal and you have to soak it in salt water overnight. And then you have to let it dry in the sun from a certain direction. And then she explained it as though it was a science that like, oh, like electricity is in it. And when you hold it in your hand, then the electricity helps you, like those magnet bracelets. And when I was 5 or 6, I was like, yeah, that sounds legit, Mom. But then now when I'm looking back on it, I'm like, that's not Christian. And that's not science. Like there's no electricity funneling through these crystals that you've soaked in salt water that you left in the sun in a certain direction to get a certain kind of light and that you hold in your hand in a certain
this
way.
This sounds like witch books.
Exactly.
Girl.
Which is strange because my mom is the more religious of my parents. My dad is Catholic, but he was also a hippie and he smokes pot all day. So he's a deadhead. And so it's strange that the more religious of the two parents, that they manifest more pagan beliefs or ideas. Cause you know, my mom's from the South. And so the influx of like Irish or when we did the 23andMe, it was like all Irish. But the influx of that like culture is like gets molded into what Christianity is. Mm-hmm. That's really unique.
What's interesting to me is not just sort of like the things that people still practice away from Christianity and how like, you know, like Santeria or people who believe in the energy that stones have. But if we think about how sort of how colonialism, mm-hmm. How Christianity erased a lot of the culture of POC experiences, how Christianity also appropriated a lot of pagan traditions, like,
that's,
you know, like
true.
Christmas,
Easter,
what else? There are other things.
I mean, it's not associated with a Christian holiday anymore, but there was Halloween and
true
was All Hallows Eve. Like that was repurposed from that. And then All Saints Day is the day after, like, so,
right.
And it was mm-hmm. about all the souls.
Right. And so, like I think of like Dia de los Muertos in mm-hmm. Mexico mm-hmm. And how much Catholic imagery is a part of that now, mm-hmm. but like, what was that before Catholicism right. was introduced?
Right.
I think that you, not only do you see that in Christianity though, which I think is a tactic to, to like force that religion onto another group of people by making it relatable. Mm-hmm. Like that's why Easter is called Easter. It used to be called Eöster, the goddess of the dawn. But like you see that also in Buddhism too. So when Buddhism went from India and it made its way over to Japan, Buddhism took on a completely different face in Japan mm-hmm. where it became mystical to a mm-hmm. point. It merged with their Shinto beliefs.
And Bushido.
Exactly. You see like the, you know, the story of like the journey to the West with Hanuman, the Monkey King, mm-hmm. like that is not what Buddhism is about, but for just the way that cultural flow works, it molded. So that way they got excited about it and they got interested in it.
And like, it's almost like its own form of like PR in a way. Right.
Yeah. It's like, look how relatable we are.
Like if we, like, I, like when I learned that, like the birth of Christ myth is not an original story. It is borrowed from another mythos.
You didn't know it was a remake?
No, I didn't know that was a remake. Honey. Now I know. I know better now. But yeah, just like how many of our beliefs are based on the retellings of other people's histories and stories that have been appropriated because it was what's the word I'm looking for? It was appropriated because it was convenient to make spiritual beliefs more palatable. Mm-hmm. And how many people have paid the price for that now?
It's almost like the ultimate study of memes and mimetics of like, this is a good idea. And now, okay, well, now I'm going to take that idea and add my thing to it or change that deity to look like me.
Right.
You know, an interesting show to watch is like the Neil Gaiman's American Gods, which in a way it highlights the fact that like how different people view the same faith is really unique and interesting. Like in one of the scenes in American Gods, it's not a spoiler, but there's an event where all these different embodiments of Jesus appear. And there's like a white Jesus, a black Jesus, a Mexican Jesus, 50 kinds of Asian Jesuses. And like, and they're all just Jesus.
Right.
So it's interesting.
Jonathan, do you have anything to add to that?
Oh, I was just thinking about all that discussion and then how Black Americans have really just latched on to that colonial Jesus. So much to the point where if you talk about anything like voodoo or anything that is still Black Americans, especially the ones that I know in the South, will call that witchcraft. They have no connection to that part of their Blackness. And it might not be their Blackness because the diaspora is varied. There's a difference between Caribbean Black and then Black American.
Right.
But you only see Black Americans being so pro-Jesus to the point where it is, the conversation could go in the opposite direction. It's mutated that colonial Christianity into something that is specifically Black, and you see it in gospel music, and you see it in the Church of God in Christ, and you see it in Black, the quote, the Black church, right? So it's become its own thing. But I don't have any, like growing up in that environment, I don't have any like, you know, like throw salt over your shoulder or any kind of quote superstitions or beliefs like that, because they would have said, oh, that's witchcraft.
Mm-hmm. That was kind of what my mom was like growing up.
Yeah. Cause you mentioned like there was none of that in your house. That's kind of how it is for. And so I'm really thinking about it. I'm like, we really have no spiritual connection. Like, and then for the younger generation that are becoming more quote spiritual than religious, the older generation are looking at that as like new age, new this, or like they're turning away from God and all this stuff. And I'm like, so there's definitely like a unique experience for Black American that doesn't connect to roots.
Basically. Well, and to build on that, just to help us close this conversation, I think a large part of that is because of the diasporic experience where, like, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that for Black Americans, we have had to create our own culture from scratch because thousands of years of tradition and history were stolen through the slave trade, because as soon as our ancestors get to America, they're brainwashed and reconditioned and forced to abandon everything they knew. And as their children are being born and scattered, there's no point where we can establish roots and share the oral histories. So all of that gets erased because of what the masters tell you is right. And so now it's like, how does an entire group of people, an entire population of people
heal from that when it's
almost like a Stockholm syndrome.
Right.
Yeah. And it's due to, you're right. It's due to the repeated assaults and a long-term erasure that goes on. Like with other cultures, when, if they are colonized for a period of time within mm-hmm. their own home and then are left, you see their cultures sort of merge. Whereas with the slave trade, they were relocated mm-hmm. and then through 400 years had it beaten out of them. And the reason that you see voodoo have its own identity and establishment is because the French were way more I'm not going to say the French were great. They weren't, but they were much more lax compared to the practices of the English. Especially, the Spanish and the French were the diet versions, but the English were
I don't know about that, because Spain was pretty hardcore Catholic.
Yeah,
it was, but you still see their traditions. They're pieces there,
but that was their land. So you said it yourself, they were living there in the Central Americas and the Caribbean islands and South America. So they still had their own culture. So when the colonizers came in, maybe they took over for a while, but their thing, but you brought black people over from Africa and took them away from that land mm-hmm. and all that belief, and then just gave them this thing. And now they've grown up in this country.
And literally bred them. Right. There is a lot to unpack. And speaking of a lot to unpack, we're about to talk about our self-care this week. So we're going to take a short break to cleanse the atmosphere and the space between your headphones. And we'll be right back.
This week, we're going into self-care with some new HR learning-based exercises. For those of you who don't know, we like to check in with each other every so often to update y'all on the content you crave, aka me. But this time, we're going to try a new listening technique. Today, we're not going to respond to each other, but instead, we are going to listen to understand, not listen to respond.
Oh.
After each segment, we can ask a clarifying question, but nothing else, and finishing by thanking that person for sharing. So, Zach, how are you?
Our resident HR expert.
Yeah.
Right. Fuck my drag, right?
As the noted HR expert on the table at the panel, it's been such an insane week with news that there's just been so much going on. And it's been a hectic work week. Then a weird thing, over the summer, I went to a doctor because I would get headaches. I went to an eye doctor to see if I needed new glasses because I get headaches and I would see double sometimes if I'm looking at a computer screen for a long time. She said it was nothing and they tried to charge me $700 to get new frames
and
new lenses. So I was no. So then, I brushed it off, and then on Wednesday, I went to a different eye doctor, and I was this is kind of getting worse about seeing double, and he did a test, and he was he used a different word. It was a big word that I don't remember, and he was have you always been cross-eyed? And I was no, not that I'm aware of. And so he did some more tests on my eyes and he said, okay, well it could be a case of early onset diplopia or something.
Diplo.
Thank you for the clarifying question. Thank you for the prompt, Jojo. So I have to, or diprosia or diplosia. I don't know the exact word. He gave me a referral. I have to go to a neurological ophthalmologist on next Thursday to see if it's an issue of the nerves in my eyes, to see what the fixes are for that. But he said that, if it's none of that and there are no problems with that, then you just need to have glasses that have a certain prism to help realign your eyes from them not being able to focus. So that was a weird week. And then, Yeah, it's a week two of keto, so here we go.
And how does keto make you feel?
Really awful for a long time.
Word.
And here we are.
Here we are.
Carlos.
Yes. So this week, not as stressful as last week. I had a bit of a rough week just from like my diet and health and weight sort of perspective. So just feel like I've taken my eye off the ball a little bit. And so I started to feel it. And so, you know, just sort of reorienting myself and getting back into the game, I think has been really important. Heading back into the gym this week. I also had some very interesting dreams this week. And I'm not sure there are people who believe that dreams are just your body and your mind reprocessing things that you're dealing with or whatnot, or your thoughts. And there are also people who think that dreams are like messages or something from, you know, another world. In two of my dreams this week, my mother, who passed away 13, 14 years ago, was alive in my dreams and like talking to me. And so it's just very interesting to have her like visit me, especially knowing all things that I've just been dealing with this week. So that was both comforting and challenging at the same time. But, you know, I'm glad I got to hang out with her for a bit. And I also had in the same dream, one of my dreams with her, I had a dream that I moved away to Virginia, to Richmond, which is where I was born, but like I have no other real connection to it. So.
And Conjugia?
Huh?
Conjugia?
Conjugia? Yeah. I don't know what that means. Yeah, it's been an all right week. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Jolie, how are you doing?
I am doing. So after letting y'all know that I've been doing a lot of reading and researching about ADHD and what that might mean for me, I've been more active about employing the strategies that I've been reading about, and and they go from like how to just sort of manage yourself and what having ADHD might actually mean. And that, like I said the last time, that it, as I understand more about it, it doesn't really seem like a disorder. It's just that my brain processes information differently. And just learning about how that operates and how that might influence the way that I approach things, because, you know, like we're taught to survive in a society for neurotypical people, and we stigmatize people who can't function inside of that. And so just, you know, a lot of things are just starting to make sense. But this week, as I was more actively employing a lot of these, a lot of the strategies, especially where it just comes to like monitoring my meals throughout the day and keeping track of and just making sure that so apparently the idea is that people with ADHD, their brains don't produce dopamine the same way that folks who are neurotypical do. So aside from medication, until I can, you know, see a doctor, and I have been speaking to people about getting back on Medicaid so I can at least do that, which is great. I have been looking at, okay, so what are the non-medical things I can do here? So, in sort of looking at, okay, so how do I monitor my nutrition, making sure I'm getting enough sleep, all of those things. And when I do go into hyper-focus mode, how do I sort of keep myself out of that? Not keep myself out of it, but how do I keep myself conscientious of time as it's moving? So one thing that I did was get this app. It's a free app for my phone that sort of works like a grandfather clock. So every 15 minutes, it just sends up a little chime, a little notification to let me know that 15 minutes has passed. And it's been remarkable at how much it's kept me on task.
because I'm not just sort of just like floating through my day and, you know, I'll be working on client emails and then suddenly it's like, oh, I wonder what I can find to help me solve this problem for my client, and then get trapped in a YouTube hole that goes from answering that question to Alexander McQueen's 2003 spring collection. You know what I mean? So it's been really, really cool. And just sort of, I've had one of the most productive weeks I've had in a while.
Oh, nice.
So like, you know, the money thing at home, it's not in a good place, but I feel like I'm in a better place to where now I can really put together a game strategy to get myself back on track here.
Now, when you mention being hyper-focused, is that line of like focusing on the email and then going into a YouTube hole? Like,
Not really. So like when I'm working on something that I care about, like when I'm working on one of my songs as an example, when I start working on it, I will focus on doing that thing and tune everything else out for hours and hours at a time, to the point that I forget about all the other things that I need to be managing. So, like I'll forget to eat. I'll go to sleep at a really bad hour. Or if I needed to do things at home, needed to take care of chores, I'll forget about all of those things. And it just sort of sends me, if I'm not careful about that, it can send me into a depressive spiral. So it's been really interesting.
Oh, thank you for sharing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jonathan, how about yourself?
I'm doing well. I like this whole week-to-week accountability thing, and so it's carried over into my work life and personal life. In work, I am a project manager for some side projects that are not like in my job description, but we're always trying to prove ourselves to management so that, I don't know, we can get promoted or something. So one of the project groups that I'm leading, it's been pretty difficult with one of the members who clearly wants to snatch my crown as project manager leader. So she'll send emails when people ask questions. She'll respond to emails first and be like, well, I don't know because I'm not the leader. So, and the leader has not provided a timeline on the project. I'm like, bitch, like, we're in a free flow mode right now. Like, it doesn't need it. But like, instead of saying that to her, I have learned how not to respond to certain things when I don't need to. And remain low energy if I need to do that. And so that's carried over into my everyday life as well. It's like sometimes you just can't be bothered with stuff and you shouldn't waste the energy to respond to negative stuff. That's something that some people don't learn until much, much later in life. Like I know I get into it with a whole bunch of people that are like twice my age and are still super petty to the point where it's like, that's why your life is the way it is, because you just don't let things ride sometimes.
Jonathan, may I ask a question about getting into it with people twice your age? Are there any examples from recent people who may have been trying it?
I'd rather not name them, but yes.
Do they know who they are?
You also interrupted.
Yeah.
I asked a clarifying question.
Not while he was dead.
That's part of the prompt, is to be able to ask clarifying questions.
When someone is
finished. It's not my... A, this is not your moment.
Okay.
But B, I apologize for interjecting, but I did have a clarifying question.
This person knows who they are. It has been an ongoing thing for years. And so, you know, I mean, that's one person that I can think of. And then in my, personal life, aside from that, I have, used the new week to week accountability thing to try new things. So just yesterday I made boba for the first time for myself. And, I went on amazon.com the day before, and, I know we don't really use them a lot, but, I use them for everything, but, got the boba pearls. went online. A friend on Instagram helped me with the recipe, like the directions on what to do, clarified some stuff for me, like when you boil them, then you put them in like sugar water to absorb. And then you just get tea. I got matcha, and it was like Whole Foods $20 matcha.
Oh my gosh.
So I was like, I've never like made it. So first, number one, I didn't know it was like a caffeinated thing. Mm-hmm. And then I don't know the water to matcha proportions. So mine was a lot more green than it usually should be. So I was up until like 4 a.m. this morning trying to go to sleep. Then I woke up at 9, like perfectly energized. So I feel like I'm going to eventually crash sometime in like the next hour. But yeah, that's basically it for me. Just not minding the BS and doing new stuff.
So my question for you is, when are you going to try to do taro?
I don't know what that is.
Oh.
That's like the root vegetable,
the
right?
One. Yeah, it's the purple drink.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I'll do ube first.
It's very, it's...
shout out to Filipino American Heritage Month.
My clarifying question is, so then how do you actually make the tea? You make it just like you would, like you brew a hot tea?
Yeah, or? You make tea and then you, the only thing, it's only tea, milk, and the boba. So mm-hmm. the boba is the weird part because they're tapioca balls. You boil them and then you put them in the tea basically. But someone told me, Kevin, if you're listening, because he did shout me out on his Instagram, said you want to put the boba, the tapioca balls, in sugar water because they'll absorb the flavor. Otherwise, they're just going to taste like water. Mm-hmm. So I did that. And yeah, so it's just tea of any of like any tea of your choice, usually a very flavorful tea mm-hmm. because it needs to retain its flavor, milk, and boba balls, and it's a drink that was originated in the 80s in Taiwan.
Oh, wait, does this mean that you're my clarifying question now?
That's
is
two more than was originally stated, but go
didn't
on.
Say only one.
Okay,
my clarifying question would be, does this mean that you're not going to be going to Boba Guys anymore?
That nope. I actually told my roommate, I was like, maybe I'll save money. And then I was like, well, this, as much as I like this drink, I still need to like go to Boba Guys to like steal the recipe.
Mm. But also, another point for Carlos, when you're making matcha, you're almost adding a, like it's super, it's basically green tea leaves ground into a very super fine powder.
Mm.
So you're basically drinking the whole leaf, so you don't make it the way that you would usually make tea.
That sounds like white nonsense.
It's Japanese nonsense, first of all.
But white people found it and went crazy because there's a cha-cha matcha by my house.
Like kale.
Well, speaking of white people, this quote...
Oh, my Lord.
From
Margaret, noted white woman and Jew.
Oh my God.
She is. I looked it up on Wikipedia.
Jesus.
In the pre-show. This quote comes to us from writer Margaret Wheatley. That's her name? Wheatley?
Mm-hmm. Whiteley. Why not?
Whiteley. Damn. Okay. But this is a good quote, though. Broken clock is right twice a day. Listening is such a simple act. It requires us to be present. And that takes practice. But we don't have to do anything else. We don't have to advise or coach or sound wise. We just have to be willing to sit there and listen.
You read that like you're an audible book.
Well, Jesse Norman passed away this week, and I feel sorry for her. Furthermore, in her 2013 interview with the Dalai Lama, he said, when you talk, not Jesse Norman, but Margaret Wheatley, when you talk, you are only repeating what you have already know. But if you listen, you may learn something new. We'll be right back.
This is Evangelist Mary L. McCracken, and you are listening to the Holy Ghost Outreach Broadcast.
You're listening.
I've got to hang up with the Lord. I am fired up because I'm on my way to heaven, and I'm certainly enjoying the trip.
And with that, you all, our time together comes to a close. Remember, We strive to be a safe and inclusive listening space to all of you out there. So don't ever hesitate to ping us on social or send an email. As always, I'm Zach.
I'm Jolie.
I'm Carlos.
I'm Jonathan. And this is...
This QPOC Life! And deliver. And deliver. And deliver. And deliver.